Well, thank you, Laura. And I'd like to start this morning with a picture that I think highlights both the productivity and complexity of many of the landscapes we see across the Midwest. And this picture was taken in central Iowa. And we have clearly a lot of row crop production is kind of our matrix for this landscape. And Iowa still has a fair number of animal operations. And if we look at the complexity component, it is often, when we think of plant communities and animal communities, it's along buffered corridors or maybe even grass waterways into the field. And so what we've done in Iowa over the past 20 to 30 years that's been a great thing is trying to keep the soil where it belongs. And both conservation tillage has helped with that, as well as buffers in general. But we still have a leaky system when it comes to nitrate because of the intensity of tile drainage across the landscape. And to combat these problems, two practices that have been proposed in many nutrient reduction strategies are saturated buffers and bioreactors. And these processes use denitrification to remove nitrate primarily. And so we are really interested in what is going on in the nitrogen cycle and if we are increasing the amount of nitrous oxide that is leaving our system. So as I said, both of these practices are in the nutrient reduction strategies. At least one was just added to the nutrient reduction strategy in Iowa and will probably follow in other states, saturated buffers. And just to review, we have our tile line leaving our field and hits our distribution box. And we send the water into the buffer where it seeps through. But we also have an overflow pipe for when flow is too high and we might be backing water up into the field. So we don't want to do that, and we have an overflow pipe installed there. Bioreactors work is the same way, in a similar way. However, instead of our carbon medium being intact soil in the saturated buffer, here it is wood chips. And so if we look at microbial denitrification as the process of microbes removing nitrate into gas. However, if denitrification is incomplete, we can result in nitrous oxide emissions. This is a concern because nitrous oxide is close to approximately 300 times more powerful than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. So we want to go all the way to N2 rather than N2O. So nitrous oxide emissions have typically, when we think of them in general and in the literature, we think of them as direct emissions from the soil surface. And many studies have found that cultivated, fertilized fields are emitting more than, say, perennial grasses next to them. One thing we know a little less about are the indirect emissions. So what of the fertilizer that we put on, if this enters the tile drain and then, say, denitrifies in the stream, what is that component? And what is the dissolved nitrous oxide that is leaving the pipe that is making into the stream? And while there are many studies that are coming out in the past few years, this is still a little bit of a data gap, and it accounts for about two-thirds of the uncertainty of our global N2O budget in the IPCC. So we wanted to look at both saturated buffers and bioreactors and answer this question of are we trading air quality problem for a water quality problem? And to do this for saturated buffers, we looked at those direct and indirect emissions in a comparison study where we measured them from a saturated buffer, from the field adjoining, and then an adjoining traditional buffer. And for our bioreactors, we had the opportunity to work on a set of pilot scale bioreactors where we could control the flow. And so today I'll be talking to you a little bit about nitrous oxide emissions from different flows out of a set of bioreactors. So our direct emissions, we use static chambers, and we measure them weekly. And we also used automated samplers to help us increase both the sampling frequency and the spatial density that we could do with fewer undergrad help. And we went back and analyzed them on a GC. And for our indirect emissions, again, this would be dissolved. We measured it as dissolved nitrous oxide, and so we measured this at the inlet and outlet of our systems, and we used a headspace method to do that. So if we dive into some of the results, we looked at two different saturated buffers, and both of these buffers were the first two installed in Iowa, and they are unique because they don't really drain that much land for their size. So they're fairly large buffers for the amount of land that they're draining. However, they function differently hydraulically. So our Bear Creek site is pattern drained, so we typically have more flow and it's a lot flashier. And our South Skunk site is not pattern drained. So what that results in are the blue bar here is what the water that the flow that is diverted into the buffer. Our gray bar is what diverted to our stream. And so at the Bear Creek site, we have about half of the flow that leaves our field is making it into the stream. And at the South Skunk, it's much higher, where close to 90% is making it into the buffer instead of going straight to the stream. And we remove anywhere from 50 to just under 200 kilograms of nitrate per year. So if we want to think of nitrous oxide and comparing systems to say if we have a piece of land and we take that's in production in a corn soy rotation and we take that out and put it into a saturated buffer, how's that going to change? So if we look at our corn soy rotation, we have our direct emissions from our surface, and then we have also what is dissolved in nitrous oxide and coming out of the tile outlet. If we look at our traditional buffer, again, we have the surface and the tile outlet. And again, just a reminder, in traditional buffers, this tile is routed straight through the buffer and is not in contact with the soil. And that's what makes our saturated buffers different, because we reroute that water and we can measure the amount of dissolved nitrous oxide leaving the buffer at the edge through observation wells. And then we also need to quantify what left and never went into the buffer, and then what is off the surface as well. So if we look at our Bear Creek site, we have our indirect emissions on the right, our direct emissions in the middle, and then on the left are the cumulative emissions. These emissions are for all of 2016 and through September of 2017, and these are in kilograms of nitrous oxide nitrogen. And this is for the given area of the Bear Creek buffer. So it was about two-thirds of a hectare. So this isn't in your typical kilograms per hectare that people are used to seeing. But I wanted to really tally these up to see what was going on. And so if we look at these, the first thing that sticks out is that the majority of our emissions are direct emissions in the surface. And this makes sense, again, because I mentioned these are very large buffers for the amount of water that's moving through them. They are also alluvial soils that are naturally wet, very high in carbon, and so they're already primed and ready for denitrification to happen. The direct emissions, the corn soybean rotation was significantly more than the traditional and saturated buffers, and then there was no statistical difference of the direct emissions between our traditional and are saturated. The other interesting part was that our indirect emissions were reduced slightly in the saturated buffer, and unfortunately we don't have many statistics with this because we just have a series of wells that we're measuring dissolved nitrous oxide from, and we're working on looking at the flow to see how much flow goes to each well to proportion this out, but right now we just kind of have an average concentration of what's leaving. And we know the flow that is leaving as well. And so if we see a similar pattern at our second site. Again, we have even more of a reduction in our indirect emissions of dissolved nitrous oxide. But again, we have the majority of nitrous oxide emissions being made up from what is directly emitted from the surface. So the take-home message for saturated buffers is, if you are taking it out of crop production and you're putting it into a saturated buffer, these results suggest that you will decrease your nitrous oxide emissions. And if you're going from a traditional buffer into a saturated buffer, we do not see much of a change. I think there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on buffers that have a lot more flow going through them, buffers that haven't been established as long, but these are the results we have found so far. I'm going to switch quickly to bioreactors and then hopefully tie everything together in the conclusion. So our bioreactors, again, we were less worried about quantification, but more curious about if we change, if we have different flow rates, how would that affect our nitrous oxide emissions? We had 9 reactors that were all in these small concrete basins, and they're about 1.5 meters by 6 meters, so they're pretty small. But we have a randomized block design where we assigned 3 different hydraulic retention times of 2 hours, 8 hours, and 16 hours. We measured these for 125 days over 2 seasons, and we took direct emissions, again, from greenhouse gas rings on the soil surface, and we looked at indirect emissions from the inlet and the outlet, as well as nitrate removal. And so first, if we look at nitrate removal, we saw significant decreases in the concentrations at our 8-hour and 16-hour, but not our 2-hour. But because there's so much more flow moving through at a 2-hour hydraulic retention time, it removed the most nitrate. But nitrate removal was not significantly different from one another between the 3 treatments. And for our nitrous oxide model, we had an inlet, a surface, and then an outlet. And so if we take our surface plus our outlet minus our inlet, if that number is positive, we have a production of nitrous oxide, and if it's negative, we would have a consumption. And so if we look at the 3 hydraulic retention times, we see, again, this was only done for 125 days, so there wasn't nearly as much production as the saturated buffers, but we see a reversal of more indirect emissions compared to our direct emissions. And this makes sense because these reactors are only, you know, 1.5 meters by 6 meters. So the bigger story here is that the numbers in red are our balance of our surface and our indirect minus our inlet, and we saw a lot more nitrous oxide production from our 2-hour. It dropped dramatically to the 8-hour, and then a little more to the 16. And so I want to slow down because that was a lot of information, and hopefully give you a couple take-home messages here. The first of which, for saturated buffers, the direct emissions from the soil surface made up the large majority of what was going through. And again, that is an area thing, area compared to the amount of flow moving through. And the field scenario emitted the most nitrous oxide. So again, if you're taking a piece of land out of field and putting it into a saturated buffer, these results show that we'll have a reduction in the amount of nitrous oxide emitted to the atmosphere. And then for bioreactors, we saw both an increase in nitrate removal and nitrous oxide production with the increase of flow. So if you have a small footprint bioreactor that has a really big tile on it and you're pushing a lot of water through, you might remove the most nitrate, but you're also likely going to have the highest nitrous oxide production. So if we can enlarge those bioreactors to increase the residence time of that water, we can maybe lower the amount of nitrous oxide that is coming off of the surface. Finally, if we want to compare these two practices, we can look at kilograms of nitrous oxide produced per kilogram of nitrate removed. And so this isn't nitrate applied, it's nitrate removed. And so we have anywhere from 2 to 5% for our saturated buffers, and that was similar to our 2-hour. But if you look at our 8 and 16, we're less than 1% on that. And if there's any time left, I'd love to answer any questions. That's a good question. So I think there isn't enough time for complete reduction, as well as our nitrate concentrations are higher. So if I'm a microbe looking to munch on something, I'm going to pick, it's going to be less energy to start breaking down nitrate than it would be that last step of nitrous oxide to N2. And so if that nitrate concentration is higher, that's where why I think there isn't, they aren't as desperate.
Do you think dissolved oxygen plays a role in that?
Yes, and we have that data. I just didn't have time to squeeze it in. So,
Is there any other possible side effects other than nitrous oxide when you increase the retention time?
Sure, yeah. Methane and methylated mercury would be two. And I don't know if the methylated mercury research is continuing. They've started it. I don't know the state of that right now, and I'm not as up on that literature. But methane production we did look at, and there were very high methane concentrations, but methane is only about 30 times more powerful than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. So if you have a lot of methane, a little bit of nitrous oxide can be that difference. So,
thank you, Morgan.
Thanks.